Hello and welcome to Saber, production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an entire episode of listener mail for you.
Yes, we do, because I'm assuming since some of you have more time at home, we have been getting a lot of amazing messages and they were just building up so much we thought we would do an episode on just listener mail, what you all are up to, what you're thinking, and yeah. We already had to split it in two, so future yes. Listener mail episode in the works as well.
Yeah, yeah, and that is a delightful problem for us to have.
We absolutely.
Are so glad to have it. Never stop. All of your stories are so amazing, and it's especially really nice right now to get to be connecting with all of you as you know. A, we're stuck at home with COVID, and B, everything going on politically in the world and specifically the United States right now. It's very stressful, and so it's very, very, very good to hear from you.
Yes, yes. So thank you.
Yes.
And please keep that coming.
Yes. Also, you know, Black Lives Matter. And so thank you to all of you who are out there doing whatever it is that you can to support the movement, whether it's being out there physically protesting or providing emotional support online or sending your hard-earned dollars to wherever it is that they can help.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And we've talked about issues of racism before on the show because food is connected to that. And you can find specifically like our episode we did with Pepper about food policy and law, and then our discussion we had with Steven Satterfield was really, really great.
Yes, we are. We're so glad to have had their voices on our show and to be able to have this platform where we can speak to these issues and with people of that caliber who are doing important work.
Yes, yes, we are. And we are looking forward to continuing to do that in the future. But for now, let us get into some listener mail.
Oh, yeah.
Should we do like a listener mail? What is it? No, I guess.
it's as many things that we talk about on the show, it can be a lot of things. you know, we do, Annie is a lot better at this job than I am, but yeah, we do read all of your emails and all of your Instagram messages and tweets and Facebook messages, and so we get a lot of photos and just kind of like on the ground reports and what you're doing and thinking when you're listening to episodes, so yeah.
Yes.
It varies widely.
It does vary widely, and the nutrition content is always great. yes. Yes. So thank you for that answer, Lauren. I put you on the spot there, but you did an excellent job.
Oh, thanks.
You're welcome. And we tried to group the messages in categories, and our first category is Easter.
Oh, y'all with these egg messages. It is so good.
It is so good. So first up, we have Nathan. Nathan wrote, "Hi, ladies. Hope you're doing well. You asked for what people do for Easter, and I am delivering. So to this day, my parents still make me hunt for Easter eggs. I very much enjoy this because I also hate candy. It's too sweet for me. So my parents have for the past 10 years been putting money into Easter eggs. Mm. Now I love looking for them, but in recent years, it has gotten to an extreme. I have found eggs in some of the most ridiculous places, including inside an oven mitt, inside a drawer, at the bottom of one of my dresser drawers, wrapped in a sock, outside in a gutter at the front of our house, and buried within a cake that I had to eat my way through to get, as well as many others. As much as I love the $100 at the end of the day, it's just gotten out of hand. All joking aside, I love my parents and hunting for Easter eggs." That, yes.
Wow.
That is pretty extreme. As someone who I also still get to do the Easter hunts outside of quarantine, I don't think I've ever had like one inside. No, I definitely have not had one inside a cake. It's not that level.
Yeah, I'm going to say cake is next level. That's pretty great.
Yeah, that's like Matilda, but in the best way, when he has to eat that chocolate cake. I think the weirdest place I ever found an egg was, like, it was in a bird feeder, like, hanging from a tree.
Wow.
So you couldn't see it. It was kind of in the divot.
Huh.
But I found it.
Yeah, you did. Emily wrote, I just listened to the Easter egg episode and you were talking about egg breaking games. Being Greek Orthodox, I can speak to this tradition. We dye eggs red, and at our normally huge Easter parties with lambs roasting on a spit and about 50 of your closest relatives all over, we have egg contests. Each person gets one egg, and you go face-to-face against someone. One person hits their rounded egg side to another person's rounded egg side, and the winner moves on to someone else, until eventually you have one egg which beat every other egg, or you have no eggs left at all. The winning egg remains in the winner's house until next Easter. It doesn't smell because it's perfectly sealed in the shell, no cracks. This year, we did a very small version of this, just our nuclear family, and I am pleased to say I won. I attached a photo of our eggs, and mine is the one in the middle. When I was little, we would have huge Greekster parties, where we would invite not only family, but also many of our friends. This almost always worked out because most years, Protestant Catholic Easter doesn't fall on the same day as Orthodox Easter. I have two fond memories of my grandma at these events. One was when she would chase all my friends around with the lamb eyeballs, grossing them out. The other is when she cheated in the egg game. She had found a wooden egg at a craft store and had dyed it red and kicked everyone's butt before revealing her prank. She was such a chaotic character, and I miss her every day. Needless to say, Easter and the egg cracking game hold a fond place in my heart.
Your grandmother sounds amazing.
Oh my gosh, that sounds like, yes, best grandma. No offense to every other grandma out there, but that's...
Pretty excellent. All right. So now we're pivoting.
Uh-huh.
Radishes.
Radishes, radishes.
Miranda Random wrote on Twitter, radishes. I heard Knights and my brain automatically went to Kylo Radish and the Knights of Radish with all the appropriate mental imagery therein. That is fantastic. And yes. And if you haven't heard my theories on Kylo Ren being a bad Jedi, then, well, I have a lot of thoughts about it. And I think that I could work them into this Kylo Radish scenario.
I for some reason thought that you might have something like that going on already. So
I don't know why that would be, Lauren. No idea.
Asha wrote, I was listening to your podcast while gardening yesterday, and the radish episode started up. It just so happened that I was harvesting the last of my radishes. So perfect. They are such an easy thing to grow, and I hope Annie's efforts are successful. I always grow them at the beginning of the year just to see something grow, even though I don't even love radishes. Thankfully, my pet rabbit, Amelia Otter, loves them and is always happy to help with the greens. Just an aside, she is definitely judgmental and rules our home with an iron paw, keeping our 50-pound dog in check. I poached the best-looking radishes with wine and chicken broth to put over a salad. By the way, I seriously recommend Roughage by Abra Burns. It goes through all the vegetables you could get at a farmer's market or CSA and gives choose-your-own-adventure instructions on what to do with them. So, book recommendations, always welcome. Thank you so much. That's Roughage by Abra Burns, B-E-R-N-S, if you're looking for that. Also, Asha included photographs of her radishes and of Amelia Otter.
And that's an excellent name.
It's an excellent name. It's an excellent bun. That's just high quality bunny right there.
Yes. Yes. Agreed. I concur. My radishes, I guess an update on that. They haven't died. I don't know that they've actually grown.
Okay.
But the leaves are still there.
Well, hey, that's great.
But I do have some oregano growing now.
Yeah.
And some mint.
What? Mint. Congratulations. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you. Can't have mint, but I can grow it. Oh, and now asparagus. I honestly am shocked and thrilled at how many emails we got about asparagus. It's awesome.
It is.
Frequent writer Rose wrote to us, "As I've mentioned before, I'm from Stuttgart, Germany, but now live in Seattle. Let me tell you, as Germans love spargel." Spargel, you say? Yes, spargel means specifically white asparagus in German. You have to say grüner Spargel to clarify if you're not talking about white asparagus. Much like kale, just after the first frost in the autumn, us Germans go crazy for Spargel the second it is available in the spring. It is the first edible sign that winter is officially over and spring has come. And yes, the taste is truly special. Slightly sweet, tiny bit bitter. Oh, and the spears are so tender. Often it is served with hollandaise sauce, ham, or smoked fish, sometimes wrapped into crepes or turned into a soup. It is understandable, though, that you have never had the chance to try it. And even in a state like Washington that grows a lot of asparagus, Spargel is hard to find and didn't even start appearing on produce shelves until a few years ago. Even then, Spargel can spoil very quickly, and often the bottoms have dried out and turned pink. Bad sign. Small, very expensive cans of Spargel can be found sometimes, but this product is just awful and not recommended at all. So imagine my delight when a German beer hall opened up in town. At first, I rolled my eyes. Ugh, just another joint selling an Oktoberfest version of my food culture. Much to my shock, it wasn't like that at all. Come spring, Spargel was on the menu. I couldn't believe it. I had never seen a German restaurant in my area put anything but the old standards on the menu. Soon after that, I became a fan, then friend, to the chef owner, Megan Combs, and her restaurant, Altstadt, became my home away from home. Flash forward to spring of 2020. On March 15th, COVID-19 was beginning to hit Seattle pretty hard. That Sunday, the city felt pretty depressed. My husband and I walked the 4 miles along the Seattle waterfront from our home to Altstadt. The city was deserted. The normally tourist-thronged shops were now ghost towns. Uncertainty hung like a heavy fog. When we arrived to Altstadt, we were only the second, third customers all day. The first ones to order food. Of course, we had come for the Spargel. It was perfect as always and just the right amount of bitter and sweet. As we ate, Governor Inslee announced that restaurants will be banned from serving in-house. That was my only Spargel of the season and the last restaurant we ate in, and maybe the last time I'll ever get to eat at my home away from home, Altstadt. It's fitting then my last meal there was Spargel, a vegetable that epitomizes rebirth.
Oh,
yeah. Oof indeed. Hopefully, Spargel will rise again one day for you.
Yes.
And thanks, special thanks to Rose, because she sent us pierogies. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yes, this amazing, beautiful, huge batch of pierogies from a place called Pierogi.
Mm-hmm.
In original location being in Seattle. And oh my goodness. So good. So many different kinds. I think my favorite thematically so far has been there's one that's it's a pierogi that's shaped like a pierogi, and it's filled with potato and cheese. And I was just like, oh, this is so cute. This is.
I liked the salmon pate one is shaped like a fish.
Yes.
That was very, because I lost my list of which flavor each one was. But I was like, I think I know what this one is. This one might be the salmon.
Oh my gosh. It's been amazing. What a treat.
It has been. Thank you.
Yes. But back to asparagus. Jolene wrote, "I wanted to tell you something about asparagus. Do you ever do oil fondue? Do you know that you can take a nice long asparagus spear and set it in the fondue pot using the tougher, thicker end as the handle? Then take it out after a bit, let it cool on your plate, and nom 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 a minute later. No fondue fork needed. My family loves fondueing asparagus spears, and it has a place of pride on special fondue nights next to the cauliflower and mushrooms."
I have not heard of that, doing that, but I definitely want to. This used to be a tradition. I think I've talked about it before in my house on New Year's. We did fondue.
Mm-hmm.
So next time, my family is a big asparagus family. I think they'll be on board.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. I'm a little bit terrified of oil fondue. I don't trust myself with hot
That's
oil.
That's fair.
But the next time that I do it, that will totally be on the list.
Yes. Sounds delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we do have some more listener mail for you.
We do, but first we've got a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
Back. Thank you, sponsor. And we're back with another topic that I didn't realize was going to inspire so much listener mail. And I've loved every second of it. Sauerkraut.
Yes.
So many thoughts people have about sauerkraut.
Passionate thoughts. I did not realize that sauerkraut was such a divisive foodstuff.
I didn't either. But, you know, there's a part of me that thinks I should have. I should have. So starting with Kirsten wrote, I was born and raised in Cincinnati, Ohio. The city has a rich German heritage. At one time in history, part of the city called Over the Rhine was primarily German speaking. And even today, there is a public elementary school in town that is a German language school. So naturally, German food, including sauerkraut, is pretty standard around town. I honestly wasn't a huge fan of the stuff growing up, but after listening to this episode, I definitely plan to give it another try next time I go home. I thought you might also be interested to know that Cincinnati hosts the largest Oktoberfest in the United States, Oktoberfest Zinzinnati. My caloric priorities at Oktoberfest have always been the giant pretzels with beer cheese and deep-fried sauerkraut balls, washed down with local German-style beer and a giant chocolate-covered cream puff for dessert. Oh. According to their website, last year during Oktoberfest, Cincinnati consumed 64,000 sauerkraut balls and 3,600 pounds of sauerkraut. We also have a beloved local specialty of German heritage that I absolutely have to mention, Goethe. G-O-E-T-T-A. Sorry if I mispronounced that. It is a pork-based spice sausage made with chewy pin oats. It's best sliced and then pan-fried crisp. There are several historic local butcher shops with their own recipes and twist on it, and lately it's popping up in trendy brunch spots all over town. FYI, there's even a separate Goethe festival every year. I know this is getting extremely long, but I have one more thing I really want to share with you. I highly recommend a SaverPod research trip to Cincinnati. The German food and historic German butchers and beer gardens are really just the tip of the iceberg. I'm sure Lauren, coming from Ohio, has heard of Cincinnati's famed Skyline Chili. Mm-hmm. Not to mention all the delicious treasures to be found at the historic Findlay Market in the previously mentioned Over the Rhine neighborhood, the barbecue scene, ice cream glory, and an astonishing number of local craft breweries. I, along with many Cincinnatians, just take so much pride in the city. Even though I had to move away from work, I'm constantly evangelizing what an awesome place it is and just want to share it with the world. P.S. I have always wanted to tell you that for whatever reason, when I listen to the show in my mind, I've always pictured you two as Sue and Mel, the original host of the Great British Bake Off show. I know that is so random, especially since you guys don't even have British accents. Maybe it's just due to your great comedic chemistry and banter. Aw, thanks. I hope it comes across as a compliment because it's absolutely meant to be one.
Oh, that does. Yes,
it completely. Does. Absolutely. Yes, yes. And yeah, you've got me. I mean, so many of the foods you mentioned, all of the foods you mentioned, I want to try. So you got me hooked on going to Cincinnati one day. We've actually heard from plenty of people from Cincinnati. So we'll just have to add it to our ever-growing list.
Yeah, it's on the list. Yeah.
Twist our arm.
Still about sauerkraut, Cody wrote, thank you for all of your random episodes about food items that sound like they should be boring but are utterly fascinating. I especially appreciate them in the time of COVID. I loved the episode about sauerkraut, and I thought you would appreciate an adventure to discover the true origin of the Reuben. I included the back and forth story article to uncover the truth from Saver, the magazine.
Our fancier cousin.
that one with class. Yeah, that one over there.
Mm-hmm. And the end even has the original recipe to try at home. As a transplant to Omaha, I was truly shocked when locals started telling me how big of a deal it was around here and that it was invented in a hotel, now being restored, right by my house. I, like most Americans, believed it came from New York and was deli-y. I was so wrong. I had never even eaten one because of my fear of sauerkraut. I was missing so much for half my life. Once I found my love of the sandwich and the big chunks of meat and press-slash-toasted aspect of the Omaha regional, correct, version, I had to find the best one in Omaha. I made a journal and tried as many regional ones as I could where the chefs claim the best. I even made a total 20-point scale with each component broken down to track the best. I will tell you, the best one so far would be a controversial pick, considering some of the locally decided best places by tradition. There is a lot of love going into Reuben's in Omaha, and I had to share.
Man, this is something, this is a person after my own heart. I've done this kind of thing in Atlanta before, not with Reuben's, yeah. But yeah.
Your ranking system for barbecue places is really epic.
It's epic and, like, overly complicated, but I think barbecue is complicated.
It is.
All right? I can't just say this is the best barbecue. You got to look at the best brisket.
No.
You
got to
look at the best. It's a whole thing.
And what about the sides?
Yes. What about the sides? This is very important. I take it very seriously. And clearly, Cody does too, which you're doing the good work and we appreciate it.
Yes. Yes.
Man, one day I shall try this sandwich.
Oh, gosh. Okay. I just had this urge to, like, bring you one right now. Not that I have a Reuben just sitting in my house or, like, or even the ingredients to make one.
It wouldn't surprise me, though, if you showed up and you were, like, throwing rocks at my window. Hey, it's a Reuben. Oh, cool. Lauren, the superhero I knew she was.
Oh, man, if John Cusack had showed up with a Reuben instead of a boombox, it would have been a much better movie.
Oh.
Anyway.
100% agree. all right, so we're going to move on now to the topic of breads.
Yes. A wide category.
Yes, very wide category. Everett wrote, like many people, I've had more time for making food lately. I made my first cake from scratch the other day. Before that, though, I had a pretzel mishap. I was using a bread machine to mix the dough. The recipe for the bread machine dough called for dipping them in boiling water, but I thought I'd bake them instead. Sorry, it was my first time, and boiling them is complicated. I switched recipes halfway through because of that. I went down the ingredients list, adding them all. It called for half a cup of baking soda, which seemed excessive. But what do I know? I have never made pretzels before. I was careful to make sure I had the right one and not baking powder. When the process was done, I had an array of fresh homemade pretzels. They tasted like soap. There was far too much baking soda. I managed to eat one of them with difficulty and frequent drinks to wash out my mouth. As it turned out, some of the ingredients from the dough recipe were meant for later. The baking soda was for the boiling water. I was gutted, as they'd say on the Great British Baking Show. In the end, it had a happy ending. I learned to read the whole recipe. And though I was crushed that night by my hard work coming to nothing, the following morning, I did it again. They tasted much less like soap and much more like accomplishment. Yes!
Yay!
You didn't let it knock you down. You learned.
Yeah.
You persevered.
Uh-huh.
And you got pretzels out of it.
Oh. That does taste like accomplishment. That's great.
It does. It does. We've all had our pretzel mishaps, and we must not let them stop us. Mm-hmm.
Don't let the pretzels grind you down. Yeah,
Don't do it.
Rachel wrote in with a tip. You don't need baking rings to make English muffins or crumpets. Just cut both ends off of a tuna can. Totally. Great
tip. Yeah.
Yeah.
Clever. Cheap.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Use what you got, especially in these times when going outside can be a little bit terrifying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And speaking of baking rings, thank you to Sam for sending us some muffin rings. Oh.
Yes. Yes. Gosh. Muffin experiment will come in soon.
Yes. Oh, yes, yes. It shall.
Alexa wrote, I am 13 years old and frequently stream your podcast to my hearing aid when I go on bike rides, walks, or just want to listen to something comforting. Your topics are always interesting and unique. Your humor is absolutely perfect. Aw, it makes me laugh out loud. I want to open my own cafe when I grow older, so I listen to the bakery type food podcast over and over and hoping it will help my future plans and dreams. Keep on doing what you're doing, and you keep on doing what you're doing, Alexa. When you open that bakery, let us know. We will be there.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, my gosh. I cannot wait for this in the future.
Yes, something to look forward to.
Oh, yeah. Ivy wrote, before we published our pancake episode, by the way, I consider myself to be a lover of all things food. I teach U.S. history, and my students know that a surefire way to get me off topic is to pose a great philosophical debate in the food realm. Today's question was twofold. One, is bologna just a hot dog pancake?
Ooh.
And two, what is a pancake? Would any cake be a pancake? Is it the dish or the cooking mechanism that constitutes a pancake?
Mmm. These are deep questions.
These are. That bologna one really has me. That one threw me.
You pondered it extensively.
Yeah, it's. I feel like my mind is expanding, y'all. That's.
Yeah, this is like the Matrix part where, you know, mm-hmm. there is no spoon. Do not try to bend the spoon. You must realize there is no spoon.
There is no spoon.
Whoa. That's what this question has done for us.
Whoa. Whoa, indeed.
Yes. Oh, yes. Speaking of whoa, Jeremiah wrote, on today's episode, you mentioned the muffin unconsidered should be the title of something. As of 10 minutes ago, it is the title of a really bad poem I wrote during my morning break. So now I shall present to you the muffin unconsidered. Oh, you staple of my adolescence, your delicate crumb, your texture so sweet, so yielding and dense. What ripe treasures are you concealing within as you stand slowly, crown rising in glory from your baking tin? Are you banana, chocolate, or bran? Warm from the oven, comfort to every woman, small child, and man. What have I left in praise to sing of you? Breakfast treat or snack? Remain in our hearts, sweet, savory, true. Beautiful snaps.
Yes.
Thank you.
Oh, my gosh.
He goes on. That's it. I acknowledge the bad structure, rhyme scheme, and content. But now the muffin unconsidered exists as a thing in the world. Attaches a picture of English muffins I made last weekend. Top of the muffin to you both. Oh, I think it was an excellent poem.
Yeah. Ah. Ooh. Sweet, savory, true. Remain in our hearts. Oh, gosh.
Yes, yes. Wise words. Belong on a pillow.
Yeah.
You know, we have the technology. We can make this dream come true.
It is true.
look for SavorPod, the store on TeePublic.
Well, we do have yet more listener mail for y'all, but while we ponder those two last mysteries, we've got one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with random. A big category. If you thought breads was a big category, we've now enlarged our horizons even more.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And we'll start with Nick. Nick wrote, the most recent sauerkraut episode inspired me to write in because I felt like Annie was channeling my inner spirit animal. Not only does she share my extreme love for peanut butter, but she also mentioned the merchant from Resident Evil 4 and did a spot-on impression. Why, thank you. My wife recently beat the newest Resident Evil 3 remake and has since started playing Resident Evil 4, so I've heard his voice many times in the last few days. I thought the Harry Potter Sorting House comments were also correct and entertaining. Anyway, I love craft beer and recently started home brewing, and I've been on a quest for the last few years to try to find the best peanut butter beer and try every one I can find. I don't know if Annie has tried any, but there's definitely some good ones out there, though I wasn't happy with the Terrapin version down in Atlanta. To date, the best one I've had commercially has been my local brewery's West Stallion here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. They were in the news 2 years ago for making a candy corn stout for October that's also pretty tasty. The peanut butter porter is deliciously peanutty with chocolate to complement it and sits at around 6% ABV for drinkability. Inspired by this, I created my own version that turned out even more peanutty. Ah, bacteria poo. That sounds amazing. Good for you for brewing your own beer.
Yeah.
Experimenting with peanut butter beer.
Yeah. Have you tried any peanut butter beers, Annie?
I have. I'm a terrible person and can't remember where they're from, but I've had like a couple of peanut butter and jelly ones, I think.
Oh, okay. Huh.
And I do like them. It's always that, like, when you take a first sip of something and you just have this expectation and it's very different than your expectation. But then when you're like, okay, I'm not really, this isn't really a beer taste that I'm expecting. It is a peanut butter and jelly taste. it was very delicious. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
I don't think I have any experience with peanut beers, or peanut butter beers rather. But speaking of bacteria poop, Chad wrote, I listened to the eggplant episode recently and suffered some subconscious physical pain during so. As a parent of young children, I appreciate you giving the warning to the listeners before delving into the eggplant emoji section, but you missed another demographic to give a warning to for the penile fracture section. I can probably speak for most males, physically felt those pains during that section. I was out for a nice stroll in the beautiful spring morning weather here in Arizona, but noticed my face wincing in pain as you were describing this. Afterwards, it did make for a good laugh when I told my wife that she needed to listen to the eggplant episode. I do also have to share an experience from the following day. I was listening to Monster DC Snipers, and instead of being serious and intense while listening, I actually started laughing out loud when I heard Lauren's voice as one of the voice actors because I automatically heard bacteria poop.
Lauren, you need to trademark that or something. But like in a kind way where you don't charge anybody. You're just associated with it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think I already am.
that's true. We just need a legal document.
We do, yeah. I'll call my lawyer about that one.
Very important.
Yeah. For anyone, I feel like possibly the crossover audience for Savor and any of the monster seasons might be a small section of a Venn diagram crossover kind of thing. But I don't know, like y'all true crime listeners are everywhere. It's always really impressive to me. So I guested on, I think just one episode of DC Snipers as like a historical lawyer. Like I got to listen to the lady's real voice from court recordings and try to vaguely replicate that. But at a certain point, I'm not an actor, and it was a very different day of recording for me
as compared to joking off around about food and random 90s movies.
Yeah, there was very little of that in those court documents. So, well, yeah.
Surprised. Apologies to all the dudes out there that we might have upset with our penile fracture discussion and eggplant episode. Noted.
Yeah.
If that ever comes up again.
Yep. We will let you know.
Yes, we will. Zara B. wrote, just started listening to the risotto episode. I agree that carnaroli is the best. I've heard and seen that arborio is like avocados. Not ready. Ready too late. Yes. And also, thank you to listeners who have been writing in to me about like how to cook rice. It's great.
Oh.
And I actually have cooked some rice before since then, and it was a success. So.
What? Oh, congratulations, Annie.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. Making strides.
I am so happy for you.
Oh, thank you. It was delicious. I made fried eggplant and rice, and oh, it was so good. Oh, my gosh.
That's great.
Yes.
Leslie wrote, snail stuff. My husband sent me a link to an upcoming event at our local natural science museum, and what do I see but snail love darts? Lauren, if we get tickets, I'll make sure to find out all I can and report back. If y'all ever feel like doing a chickpea or bean episode or two-parter, I'd like to shout out my two favorite bean-based desserts, navy bean pie and Jordan chickpeas instead of Jordan almonds. Yeah. I've been lucky enough to try both while researching special event meals for work. Snickerdoodle hummus is a student favorite on campus. I'm also a fan of taiyaki and anpan and red bean ice cream, but it's been a while since I've had those. It's been amazing to listen to the podcast over the years.
Yes! I love everything about that. Love darts. Oh, wow.
And Leslie wrote in with an update.
Snail Darts update. It turned out to be a throw dodgeballs at a target type game, and I got absolutely crushed. I guess I'm not competitive snail.
Well, don't give up, Leslie, because, you know, you got to practice at these things.
You do.
I think you could be a competitive snail one day.
You know, if you want to, you know.
If you want to. You don't have to. Might not be for you, but.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Have I ever mentioned this on the show, Annie? Maybe you remember, like, after we did the episode on snails, I obtained a couple of pet snails.
I don't think you have mentioned this on the show.
Yeah, aquatic snails. I inherited a aquarium from one of our coworkers, and it came with a couple snails that sadly did not make it through the transition to a new home. But since then, I have two thriving snails named Felix and Noodle. And they're so weird, and I love them so intensely.
I love getting your updates about them, seeing pictures of them. It's the best.
I realized after I got them home that one is orange and one is gray, and the two cats that are my roommate's cats, but they're the household cats, you know, are also orange and gray, and so it's just it's cuteness abounds.
Do you think they have like a connection, the gray snail and the gray cat?
You know, I kind of think they do. I feel like their personalities are pretty well in alignment as far as, you know, a mammal and a mollusk can have personalities in alignment. they recently laid a big old sack of eggs. So that's a new adventure.
Be a snail grandparent.
Yep, I guess so. That I was unprepared for this potential eventuality. Because they're not hermaphroditic snails. They're I'm forgetting the word, but yeah, you need a male and a female to do the thing. And I guess one of them is each of those things. Still don't know which one.
Again, we are a food show. I love that conversation can go this way. Well, please keep the updates coming. I got to know about these babies.
I really hope they're going to be okay, and or that all of my friends who have aquariums want some snails because they lay.
Never heard. Like, I've heard of please adopt my kittens. Please adopt my puppies. This is my first time of please adopt my snails. And it's beautiful. So thank you for that.
Annie, they lay egg sacks of 50 to 200 eggs. I only have a 20-gallon tank.
50 to 200 is quite a wide range.
How many
friends do you have?
Oh, not 50 to 200 who want snails. Certainly not. We'll see what their survival rate is like. Oh my gosh, I'm in over my snail head. Oh, it's okay. Anyway, we are a food podcast.
Tis true. But I snail talk all the time. Snail stuff. Little aside.
Snail stuff. Woo.
So moving on from snail stuff, now we have one that we wanted to end on about food banks and soup kitchens. Shannon wrote, "It was great to hear you all talk about food banks, pantries, and soup kitchens. I work in an urban school that has a small food pantry, and it is an absolute necessity for many of our students and community members. Especially in times like these, it is especially important that those who can donate and volunteer in order to support these food banks and pantries. As you were talking about this, though, I was disappointed that you all didn't mention something that is still an incredibly popular charity event, but not super helpful to food banks and pantries. the canned food drive. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you came across this in your research, but although canned food drives are nice because they give food to people in need, they are not as helpful as they might seem. The food collected at events like these is typically random and food from the back of people's pantries. This can lead to expiration, storage, and nutrition issues at the food bank. Food banks typically get food for much less than its retail price, including produce and protein/meat from grocery stores and stockpiles around the country, which is needed in order to create nutritious meal kits and food boxes. Like I said earlier, it's not that canned food drives aren't helpful. They are. It's just that the impact from monetary donations is so much greater. As the director of our food pantry said once, a 50-cent can of beans can go to one family, but we can stretch that 50 cents to get at least 3 cans of beans for 3 families. Please just give us 50 cents. Like I said, not sure if you came across this in your research, but wanted to make sure to share in case you hadn't. Also, if you live in Indiana, the major food bank network here is called Gleaners. They're a member of Feeding America and can always use volunteers and donations, monetary preferred.
Yes, yes. Excellent point. Thank you. Thank you so much for bringing that up. Food banks are one of the great things that they can do within communities, and why it's so important to have these organizations out there working is that, yeah, they can really reach out to people at all levels of the food chain and organizations at all levels and work with them in order to move food that that would otherwise go to waste or that, you know, would otherwise normally enter the supply chain and just reroute it to people who are truly in need of it. And so, yes, support your local food bank.
Yes, however you can. And thank you so much, Shannon, for this point, because I feel like most of us want to do the best we can to help. And it's just good to know the ways that we can do that, because I'm certain some people, when they donate their cans, think, this is the best I can do. But if you can spare the money instead, it's good to know that that is more helpful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Both are good. Yes. Monetary donations are great.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you to all of the listeners who wrote in and who are still writing in and sharing all of your food adventures. We love it. Like we said, we're going to have a second one of these in the future because we didn't even get through all the messages we had saved up. And that's when we're still reading listener mail at the end of episodes, at the end of regular episodes. So just really, we really, really appreciate it.
We do. Thank you.
Yes. If you would like to email us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at SaverPod. And we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening. And we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.